On this week's Nesson Patriots podcast, we break down the Patriots 2022 NFL draft, including where they hit and where they may have missed in their 10-man draft class. Hello and welcome back to the Nesson Patriots podcast. It's been a little while since we brought you a podcast episode. I think it's been about a month and a half, 2 months. That's just kind of the nature of the offseason, but we have plenty to talk about and break down and discuss today because the Patriots had their 2020 NFL draft this past weekend. They drafted a total of 10 players. We'll get into who those players are in much greater detail in just a second, but overall, I would say this was a, what's the word you would use? Polarizing, controversial, questionable? What's the one word you would use for this draft here, Dakota?
I would say I want to use polarizing, but that suggests that there are like an equal amount of people on both sides, where it seems like there's far more people on the not liking what the Patriots did side. But yeah, controversial works for sure.
Yeah, I saw a report from, I can't remember who it was from, or a comment from some reporter that was saying, man, if this was any other draft, if this was any other coach, like Bill Belichick would be getting killed. And they're like, is he not getting killed? I mean, yeah, if you turn on any sports radio in Boston this week, it's basically Armageddon because the Patriots drafted a guard in the first round and did a bunch of other moves that a lot of us were not expecting in this year's draft. But so on today's show, we're going to go through our five top storylines / takeaways from this draft, just to kind of package it all in an easily manageable package there. But before we get into that, just a quick rundown of who the Patriots actually did draft in this draft. So they, as I mentioned, selected a total of 10 players. Round one, Cole Strange, offensive lineman from Chattanooga. Round two, Tyquan Thornton, wide receiver from Baylor. They got Marcus Jones, a cornerback from Houston in round three. Jack Jones, a cornerback from Arizona State in round four. They now have three Joneses in their cornerback room, plus another one in their quarterback room. So that's going to be very confusing this season. Then also in round four, Pierre Strong, running back out of South Dakota State. Bailey Zappi, quarterback out of Western Kentucky. Then in round six, they drafted three players. Kevin Harris, running back out of South Carolina. Sam Roberts, defensive lineman out of Northwest Missouri State. Chasen Hines, offensive lineman out of LSU. And then finishing things up in round seven with Andrew Stuber, an offensive tackle out of Michigan. So that was the Patriots 10-man draft class. And to start things off here, I think we need to begin with the kind of main takeaway, main storyline from all of this is the prevailing sentiment that the Patriots really reached on some of these picks, particularly their first round pick, Cole Strange, and their second round pick, Tyquan Thornton. Both of those guys coming into the draft were projected to go significantly later than the Patriots chose them. Strange was projected by most draft experts, draft analysts, as a second or third round pick. Thornton, a lot of people thought he would go down on day three, maybe even down in the fifth round. Patriots got him at number 50 overall, actually traded up to get him at number 50 overall. So in the days since the draft, there's been some reporting that's come out that's suggested that if the Patriots did not draft these players where they did, they would have come off the board a handful of picks later. So there did seem to be other teams that were similarly high on both of these players as Bill Belichick was, but still two highly controversial picks, I would say. Just Dakota, a couple days later now, you've had a little bit of time to digest these. What's your take just generally on these top two picks?
Yeah, not to cop out, but I still don't even know if I have one, just because, like, I think part of my perspective has been colored by so many like varying takes on it as a whole that I don't really know what to believe anymore. But I guess, you know, I've sort of settled on the fact that I don't think necessarily that in a vacuum the Patriots reached too much for Cole Strange. I think there's enough reporting out there that suggests like he might have gone earlier than these, a lot of people saying that he would have been around three pick. Like, I think it's probably fair to assume now that he would have gone somewhere in the middle of the round too. So if the Patriots really, really liked him and really valued him, then I think, you know, I can justify them using the 29th pick on him, because at the end of the day, the draft is about getting good players. People get really caught up in talking about maximizing value and maneuvering around the board. to sort of win the game of the draft. But ultimately, the point of the draft is to get good players, players that can help you win football games. And the Patriots clearly think that Cole Strange and Tyquan Thorne can help them do that. And, you know, considering the Patriots have always had great offensive line play throughout the Tom Brady years, I can see why they're prioritizing doing that. There's a lot of uncertainty on the offensive line, as we've talked about throughout the offseason. So I'm not surprised that they prioritized getting a player who some believe is going to be a day one starter. But, you know, at the same time, specifically on Cole Strange, you know, one thing I do go back to is, you know, people have made the Logan Mankins comparison a lot. That's a player who they never won a Super Bowl with. It's not Logan Mankins' fault, but they never, you know, he wasn't on a Super Bowl winning team. You know, they've had players like Dan Connolly and Ryan Wendell, who I think both were undrafted. You know, Brian Stork was a player they got in the fourth round. David Andrews was undrafted. Shaq Mason was a later round pick, I think, in the fourth round. Joe Tooney, one of the better guards they've really ever had, was a third round pick. So I just think when I look at all that, I think the Patriots just didn't need to use a first round pick on a guard. Their history of developing guards or interior offensive linemen that they take later in the draft indicates that they would have been just fine going after someone like that. And yeah, I mean, I get, you know, some people think there's a chance that Cole Strange ends up being like an elite guard, or I've seen the term all time center thrown out there, that he has that kind of talent. So that's great. And maybe that comes to fruition, but I just think given their other needs and their track record of developing linemen taken later in the draft, I just don't think they needed to pick him when they did. And on the Tyquan Thorne pick, listen, I there's obviously a lot of people, I think Mel Kiper didn't even have him in his top 25 receivers, and for whatever that's worth, given Mel Kiper's track record in this draft. But, you know, the Patriots needed to get speed. They talked about wanting to get speed on both sides of the ball this offseason. He was one of the fastest, if not the fastest, receivers in the draft. I know some of his combine workouts indicate he might not have the same sort of agility that the Patriots usually target, but he is fast. And, you know, people believe he can be a good route runner as well and has a good football IQ. So, you know, maybe the Patriots found their Tyreek Hill, so to speak, even though Tyreek Hill was a fifth rounder. I think the value is questionable there, but there's also reporting that suggests he was going to go a couple picks after number 50. The Patriots didn't trade up. So I have more questions on the Cole Strange one than I do Tyquan Thorne. I think, you know, receivers are so talented now, the Patriots might be able to make it work. But yeah, I just think you could go a lot of different ways with this thing.
See, I'm actually of the opposite opinion, I think. I don't really get the Tyquan Thornton pick. I'll get into it in a second, but starting on Cole Strange, I really like Cole Strange as a player. He's a guy that I had the Patriots picking in multiple of my mock drafts, including my final mock draft right before the draft. I had that happening in round three, not round one. And there is definitely the positional value argument, which I think is a very applicable argument to this situation, because Cole Strange, I think he's going to be a great player for the Patriots. I think he's going to be an immediate starter, potentially a long-term starter. Who knows how he develops, especially coming from the FCS. But as a player, I really like the fit. I really like the player. But I agree with everything you said there about the value of offensive guards and interior offensive linemen. You just look at what the Patriots have done really ever since Logan Mankins left. And that was in 2014. They traded him before the 2014 season. They have not had a single regular interior offensive line starter who was drafted before the third round. And Joe Tooney was the only one in that group who was even drafted in the third round. Other than that, you're talking about fourth round guys, sixth round guys, seventh round guys, a lot of undrafted guys in there. And the Patriots have been extremely successful over that span. So I was a little surprised that this was something that I was thinking even when the talk was, oh, should the Patriots draft Zion Johnson in the first round, the guard from Boston College? And he was a guy that everybody expected to go in the first round. And I was of the opinion that probably not. You can probably wait until round three or four and get a guard and use that top pick on a player at a more kind of premium position, or whatever term you want to use to define that. Just because you look at some of the defensive players that were on the board that the Patriots passed up, it's Trent McDuffie, it's Kyir Elam, it's Devin Lloyd, it's Quay Walker, Dax Hill, the defensive back from Michigan. A lot of these players that really looked like marquee Patriots targets going into the draft, almost all of them were still on the board at 21, and then a good amount of them were still on the board at 29 after they traded down. Patriots ended up passing on all of those players and taking a guard in the first round. So I think even if Strange is a great player for the Patriots, even if he's a multi-time Pro Bowler, if any of those defensive players pan out, I think it's going to look like a questionable pick just because given the positional value and where you can find those players. But overall, from a player perspective, I do like Cole Strange. I do think he's going to be a good player for the Patriots. Thornton, it was just a weird pick for me because he's so different from everything that the Patriots have traditionally looked for at that position. They've really never gone for those straight line speed type guys. And Thornton ran a 4.28 40, fastest 40 of any wide receiver at the combine this year, fastest 40 of any wide receiver the Patriots have drafted under Bill Belichick. But he also had the slowest three cone, the slowest short shuttle of any receiver drafted under Belichick, except for Matthew Slater. He's also the lightest receiver they've drafted, despite being 6'2", and he has the second smallest hands. He's a really skinny guy, a really just kind of slight build, slight profile. There are questions of whether he's going to be able to hold up against some more physical, better cornerbacks at the NFL level. And it's just such a departure from what they traditionally look for. And look, I know they needed to get speed. I know they haven't had the best track record of drafting receivers anyway. So maybe kind of veering away from that isn't the worst thing in the world, but I went back and looked at some of the speedier receivers they've had in recent years, guys they didn't draft, but they ended up signing or trading for as free agents. You look at Brandon Cooks, he was a speed demon, ran a 4.33. You look at Philip Dorsett, he ran a 4.33. And I went and looked back, I was like, were these guys, did they have questionable quickness times too? And I look in and no, they did not. Brandon Cooks's shuttle was in the 99th percentile, three cone in the 82nd percentile. And Philip Dorsett was right up near there in both of those as well. So it's just such a departure from what the Patriots usually look for. And I feel like players like this just have such a high bust potential that this was probably the most questionable pick of the draft for me for the Patriots.
Yeah, no, I hear all that. I think Tyquan Thornton is taller than those two players by a decent amount. But I mean, either way, I think, like you're saying, the quickness and that stuff is a huge departure for them. So it'll be interesting. And I mean, it's no coincidence that so many people had him as a fifth, you know, with a fifth ground grade on him, or didn't have him among their like top 20 receivers in the draft. I mean, you know, that stuff could pan out. So we'll just have to see. I will say that there was a report today that the Patriots believed, or the, you know, there was intel that the Pittsburgh Steelers were going to draft Thornton at number 52. I don't know if that's true. If it is, I think it would be, you know, that would encourage you if you were a Patriots fan, given the Steelers track record of drafting wideouts, especially after the first round. But you know, who knows if that's true. And a couple other comps while you're bringing up previous, you know, speedy receivers the Patriots have had. I think the last time they took a receiver who ran the fastest 40 yard or the 40 time in the combine was Chad Jackson. He was a second rounder. We know how that panned out. And then before him, I think Bethel Johnson.
Bethel Johnson, yeah.
He was, I think, in 2004 or whatever. And he finished second among receivers for the 40 yard times. And he also didn't really end up to much. So, like you said, the Patriots don't really have a strong track record of targeting those kind of speedy receivers in the draft. And then at the same time, he's also a departure from what they normally do. So I you add it all up. And like you said, it is just kind of a confusing pick. And one more point I wanted to make about Cole Strange. I do think, you know, maybe, you know, one element into this that some people aren't considering is, you know, there's a lot of talk that he eventually could move to center eventually. And I think this also, you know, there was a lot of value in what Ted Karras brought to the Patriots at being able to play guard at a high level on the left side and also being able to play center if he needed to. And at the same time, when David Andrews missed the entire season, whatever it was, a couple of seasons ago, I think you could really see the fall off for, you know, that you could see how the offense suffered when he wasn't in there, when you didn't have high level center play on the offensive line. So I think as much as this might be about the Patriots trying to fill a need at guard, it all, from a long-term perspective, it might want them, might be them wanting to make sure they're covered if and when something ever happens to Andrews, or, you know, he's going to be 30. So he's not like he's necessarily getting old, but whenever he leaves, whenever that might be. So I think it might be sort of a double value thing for them. And then one other thing I wanted to make, we've talked about just generally how strange the top of the draft was for the Patriots. I mean, if you just look at it, let's just say for the sake of argument that Cole Strange would have lasted to the third round or even the fourth round. And I think people would have felt a lot different about this draft if, say, their first pick in the draft was Trent McDuffie. And then it went, you know, McDuffie, Tyquan Thornton, Cole Strange, and maybe even Marcus Jones. Maybe they trade up to get Marcus Jones at the bottom of the third or whatever. Like if they came out of it with that lineup instead of Strange, Thornton, I think people would feel a lot better about it. And I think the frustration is there seemingly was a path for them to do just that. They didn't need to go the route that they went. They could have gotten a better player in the first round and still gotten Cole Strange and Tyquan Thornton later in the draft. So I think, you know, that's just another question mark for me.
Yeah, a big thing for Patriots fans to kind of keep in the back of their mind over the next couple of years, the two players that they made two trades with the Kansas City Chiefs, the trade down in the first round and the trade up in the second round. The players that the Chiefs drafted with both of those picks, Trent McDuffie and Sky Moore, the slot receiver out of Michigan, both of them looked like pretty clear Patriots fits going into the draft. So definitely going to anger some Patriots fans if either of those players turns out to be a real player going forward. Let's shift on from those top picks and go to takeaway number two here. I think probably the most surprising development of this draft, other than these first two picks, was the fact that the Patriots made 10 picks. So far, they have signed 8 undrafted free agents and 0 off the ball linebackers in that group. The only linebacker of any sort they've gotten is DeMarcus Mitchell. He's a defensive end outside linebacker type who's an undrafted free agent out of Purdue. But from an off the ball inside linebacker perspective, that was a position that was widely viewed as one of their biggest needs, if not their single biggest need going into this draft. And the Patriots just said, no, we're good. We like what we have. We're not going to draft it. It's not like they didn't have any opportunities either. I mentioned the fact that Lloyd and Quay Walker were on the board in round one. In round two, basically every linebacker that had been linked to the Patriots before the draft, whether that's N'Kobe Dean or Troy Anderson or Leo Chenal or Christian Harris or Chad Muma, all of them were on the board for the Patriots to choose at some point. And the Patriots passed on all of them. And then even late in day three, where they love drafting linebackers for depth and special teams purposes, they didn't select any there either. So it was very surprising to see them come out of this draft with no linebackers. We spoke with Matt Groh, the Patriots director of player personnel, after round two. He said he's very excited about the Patriots' current linebacker group. And the team seems to be pretty high on Cameron Megrone, who's a 5th-round pick last year, missed his entire rookie season with a torn ACL, probably would have gone a little bit higher than the 5th round if he hadn't torn that ACL. Pretty athletic player, undersized player, sort of similar to some of these linebackers that we were talking about the Patriots potentially targeting in this draft. But it seems like to me, I mean, there's still a chance for more additions to this group before the season starts up. You could see another veteran signing or two. You could see an undrafted player or two come in, but it really seems like the Patriots are feeling pretty good about their linebacker group, which I think is a surprise because there's not a lot of certainty in that group, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest word there is uncertainty, because I think I can easily see why the Patriots are confident in the linebackers they have. And I think you could definitely craft an argument that they're not crazy for thinking that way. I mean, they have a lot invested, not necessarily from a financial standpoint, but in terms of draft capital, they used an early round pick on Josh Uche. I forget where Infernie Jennings went. I think he was,
third round. He was right after Uche. Yep.
Yeah, he was a third rounder. And then Cameron Megrone, someone whose athleticism is what a lot of Patriots fans want them to target in a linebacker. I mean, if you buy into the fact that his ACL injury caused him to slip in the draft, and without it, he might have been more like a second or third round pick. If the Patriots in this draft used a second or third round pick on a really athletic linebacker out of Michigan, people probably would have been pretty happy about that. So I do buy it when Matt Groh says it's kind of like getting an extra draft pick, getting him back. And then Raekwon McMillan was someone who showed out a lot in training camp last year before getting hurt. You know, maybe he comes back and plays well.
He's a guy so the Patriots have liked for a while too. Belichick said last year he's someone they targeted back in, was it 2017 or 2018, wherever he was coming out of Ohio State. So yeah, he's been on their radar for quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you consider someone like Jabril Peppers, who is more of a defensive back, but can come down and play box linebacker. They have multiple guys who are able to do that. So I think you can definitely make a case that the Patriots have enough in-house talent, especially if they believe in them. And again, like I understand why some people, especially with the draft, are hesitant to still give Belichick and the Patriots the benefit of the doubt, but we still are talking about the best coach in NFL history. And for as much as people want to criticize people like Joe Judge and Matt Patricia, they were head coaches in the NFL for a reason. Like, they know football. The Patriots have good talent evaluators. If they feel good about the linebackers they have, you know, I'm not going to criticize them too much. But the problem is, like you said, it's uncertainty. We just haven't seen most of these, some of these guys, we haven't seen them play at all. And Fernie Jennings, he did not play well his rookie year and then didn't play at all last season. Might've been a Foxborough flu type of thing. And then for whatever reason, the Patriots haven't felt confident enough to give Josh Uche more playing time, something we thought he was going to get a lot last year. Maybe, you know, maybe they believe that he's ready to take that next step this year. We'll just have to see. But like you said, it's uncertainty, and it's hard, I think, for people to believe in that group just because we haven't seen it play out. But again, I think you could talk yourself into believing that they have enough to get it done, which is why for me, I've ultimately changed my perspective. And I really believe that their top need defensively, I mean, you could say cornerback, but for me, I think it was another interior defensive lineman to really shore up the run defense. I thought that's where things really fell apart for them down the stretch last season, which is why I thought, like, I wish they would have gone up and traded for someone like Travis Jones out of UConn. I thought that was a perfect fit, but they didn't do it. So maybe they believe Devon Godchild will be better in year two than he was in year one.
Oh, and I don't even think they would have needed to trade for Travis Jones too. He slid to like 70 or something like that, 60 or 70. Right. He was available a lot later than people thought that he was going to be. So that was a bit of a surprise as well. And yeah, one final note on the linebackers, even though it's a pretty uncertain group from an outside perspective, just because we haven't really seen a lot of these guys play in a Patriots uniform, it does seem to have at least attempted to remedy some of the issues that were really kind of prevalent with last year's group when it was old, it was slow. This year, a lot younger and a lot more athletic, with guys like McGrone, McMillan, some of the Mac Wilson, who the Patriots traded for from the Browns. They did bring back Juwan Bentley, who is one of those kind of old school thumper types. But right now, Dante Hightower, Kyle Van Noy, Jamie Collins, all of them are still free agents. I mean, maybe one of them or more of them ends up coming back to the Patriots, but right now it's a much smaller and much more kind of nimble linebacking core overall, which I think is a direction the Patriots should be looking to move, just given the issues that they had late last season.
Yeah. More quick point on that too, because I forgot to mention Mac Wilson when I was talking. And again, his athleticism is something too that fits into what we're talking about. And again, we talk about giving the Patriots the benefit of the doubt and trusting Belichick to sort of find some of the diamonds in the rough that he has in the past. I mean, who am I to say that Mac Wilson won't be the next Kyle Van Noy, you know, a player that the Patriots target that's sort of a depressed asset that they find more out of. And I mean, I saw a tweet today, I forget exactly what it was, that I think Mac Wilson is 6 months older than Devin Lloyd. And Mac Wilson's about to enter his fourth season while Devin Lloyd's entering his rookie year. So like, for all intents and purposes, you could argue Mac Wilson's like kind of like a, you know, at least an experience or age, like a rookie. So maybe there is a lot of untapped potential in there. And so we'll see, maybe he turns into a good player for the Patriots.
I would have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure Mac Wilson is younger than at least one or two of the Patriots draft picks this year. Yeah. This is an extremely old Patriots draft class. It's a lot of 24-year-olds, a lot of 23-year-olds. I think they got a couple of 25-year-olds in their UDFA class. So a lot of very seasoned players in there. And Mac Wilson will be a very interesting player to watch. He started 14 games for the Browns as a rookie. And then just, it was kind of a similar situation to Winovich, who he was traded for, just kind of fell out of favor and saw his playing time just kind of continue to dwindle. We'll see what he can bring to this Patriots defense. We'll hit these last three ones a little bit more quickly, but third on our takeaway storyline list, Patriots needed cornerback help going into this draft. They did not draft one in the first round. They did not draft one in the second round, but they did get one in the third and they did get one in the fourth. So two new members of that Patriots cornerback group. One of them, Marcus Jones, who they got in the third round, really undersized, only about 5'8", 175 pounds. He'll be one of the smallest players on the Patriots roster when he arrives for OTAs, but really interesting player, plays a lot bigger than his size. He's fast. He's really physical in coverage. He's a good tackler and he's also a fantastic return man. I think that's going to be a real asset for the Patriots this season. He's even played some offense when he was at Houston. So maybe you even see some weird gadget play type stuff with him. And then Jack Jones in the fourth round, he's a little taller than Marcus Jones, but he's also a pretty small player. He's south of 180 pounds, pretty slim, doesn't have a ton of beef on him. He's definitely not a Jo'Wan Williams type from a couple years ago. He's also a guy who did some, he dealt with some off the field issues during his college career. He was arrested for burglary. He had an academic suspension. He was also suspended at Arizona State for a team rules violation, reportedly for fighting with one of his teammates. So there's going to be some monitoring necessary there, probably just to make sure that his mind's in the right spot and he's staying on the right track. But from a talent perspective, he's an extremely talented cover man. He had great on-ball production in college, a lot of pass breakups, a lot of interceptions, also played a ton of football between USC and Arizona State, came in as a five-star recruit too. So ton of talent there. Looks like the Patriots got an inside guy in Marcus Jones, an outside guy in Jack Jones. We'll see how they develop, but I wouldn't be surprised if one or both of these guys see some significant playing time as a rookie here, given the depth above them on that depth chart.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the Patriots, after kind of whiffing on Jo'Wan Williams, who was a much larger cornerback, you know, kind of went back to drafting a couple of guys that, like, their size, I guess, more closely mirrors someone like Duke Dawson or Cyrus Jones. I think both those guys were a bit bigger than Marcus Jones, more kind of in line with Jack Jones. Too many Jones.
There's a lot of Joneses. Too many Joneses. Yeah,
too many Jones. There's multiple Harrises now. There's multiple Max. Good thing Landon Roberts still isn't around, with Sam Roberts now here too.
I think that I saw somebody tweet the other day, if the NFL still had their old uniform rules, where if you had two guys with the same name, you had to have the letter, that Mac Jones would have to have his entire name on the back of his jersey, because you have Mac and Marcus Jones now. I think you should do that anyway. That would be kind of fun. But anyway, continue. I digress. No,
that would be cool. That would be cool. I'm all for that too. I think it's interesting. You know, everybody wanted the Patriots to get a J.C. Jackson replacement. They go find the sort of press man corner who can really dominate outside. You know, we mentioned Jack Jones is still pretty small. Maybe he develops into someone who can do that. But the Marcus Jones picked me. I mean, he's kind of has slot corner written all over him. And Jonathan Jones is entering a contract year. Battled injuries here over the last couple of seasons. You know, one of the better slot corners in the game, but you wonder if injuries will mount up. We'll have to see how he looks this season. So it seems like he's more of a natural replacement for Jonathan Jones there, another Jones. I think, again, Marcus Jones seems to be the player who, if anybody could agree on something about the Patriots draft, it seems like everybody liked that pick. His versatility is a great fit for the Patriots and really is a playmaker. So we'll have to see how it pans out. And then on Jack Jones, it's interesting because everyone expected him to slide because of the off-field stuff. He had an arrest back in, I think, 2018. It was that eventually he got like misdemeanor burglary charges or something. He was academically ineligible at USC before going to junior college and then to Arizona State. And then he got like a fight at a practice with Arizona State and got suspended for most of the 2020 season, which there weren't many games anyway because of COVID. But, you know, the more you read up on him, a lot of people sort of express those concerns about the character and the off-field stuff. But a lot of people point to the fact that he's also someone who's dealt with a ton of adversity and he's gone through a lot to get back to this point. Like, he went to junior college and didn't even play football. He went specifically to get his grades back up. And then, you know, to his credit, you know, after everything that went wrong at USC, legally and academically, resurfaced with Arizona State. And yeah, he had the fighting issue, but turned himself into a player that got drafted in the fourth round by the New England Patriots. So yeah, I think that's at least impressive without knowing him very well. So I think, you know, there's a lot of, if you read some of the analysis on him, it's that he's very tough and that he's been through a lot and sort of seems to have that edge on his shoulder or that chip on his shoulder and plays very scrappy. So maybe that will serve him well. It served J.C. Jackson well, right? Someone who had off the field concerns when he was coming into the league and he went undrafted and sort of rode that chip to becoming a really good player. So I think if you're the Patriots and Patriots fans, you have to hope that maybe Jack Jones, while not a perfect comp, it's not the same kind of player, different situation than J.C. Jackson, that he kind of follows a similar track and the Patriots can you know, tap into the talent that he has.
And that was a situation where it did seem like the Patriots potentially got some good value there with Jack Jones, even though a lot of people were expecting him to go a lot later. It's from a talent perspective, he he probably would have gone even higher if he didn't have some of these off the field issues. Our old friend Doug Kide, our former co-host on this show, had a really good profile of Jack Jones before the draft over at Pro Football Focus. If anybody wants to go check that out, it was a pretty good read on the Patriots' new cornerback. Moving along, though, we'll move from cornerback to quarterback. The Patriots, despite drafting Mac Jones in the first round last year, and despite Jones looking very much like a franchise quarterback as a rookie, the Patriots use a fourth round pick on Bailey Zappe out of Western Kentucky. Me personally, I was not the slightest bit surprised that the Patriots drafted a quarterback this year. That's really what they do. Basically, for the entire Belichick era, they've drafted a quarterback every two or three years, regardless of how their current starter was playing. And that current starter being Tom Brady for the longest time, they had one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL and still continue to use these draft picks on quarterbacks. I was a little bit surprised, and I think it can be debated / questioned whether a fourth round pick was the best use, whether this was the best use of a fourth round pick in this year's draft, whether the Patriots should have used that pick on a position like potentially a defensive tackle, as you mentioned, or an offensive tackle, or an edge rusher, or a linebacker, or a slot receiver. They did have needs elsewhere on their roster that seemed to be more immediate. And a fourth round pick on what they hope is a backup quarterback who never sees the field for them, I think it can be questioned whether that was the best use of resources, rather than doing that in the fourth round, rather than waiting until the sixth round and getting, I don't know, Carson Strong or Brock Purdy or one of these other quarterbacks. Obviously, the Patriots like Bailey Zappe significantly more than any of those other QBs. They liked him more than Sam Howell, which was notable because Howell was still on the board when the Patriots picked Zappe. And there's definitely a lot to like about Zappe's game from a production standpoint and an intelligence standpoint. But I do think it's fair to question whether this was the best use of a fourth round pick.
Yeah, I think the question there with the Bailey Zappe pick is, again, the Patriots routinely during the Tom Brady, when he was around in Foxborough, used kind of mid-round picks on projected backups. They did it with Rohan Davey.
They did it with Rohan Davey like 2 months after Brady won his first Super Bowl. So it was something that's big, that goes way, way back.
Yeah, same. Yeah, Kevin O'Connell, Ryan Mallett, those are just a few of the guys. Yeah. Different situation with Garoppolo, right? Because he was seemingly drafted to be Brady's successor. So yeah. That's not really a good comp for this, but you know, I think it's smart for the Patriots to get a good backup behind Mac Jones and to kind of get stability there, get the next, maybe Brian Hoyer, so to speak. The question again is, did they need to do it in this draft? Could they have just rode the Jared Stidham, Brian Hoyer thing for another season and punted this need to next year? I think you definitely could make that case. And that's probably where I ultimately fall on this too. However, I've kind of started to like the pick, and or at least I think it does make sense for some of the reasons you mentioned. And I don't think it's a coincidence really that they drafted somebody that's really, you know, has all these intangibles. I mean, he was productive in college. I think he broke like Joe Burrow's, his touchdowns or passing yards record or something like that.
I'm pulling up the stats right now, but they are pretty, pretty incredible.
Yeah. But he had the top Wonderlic score of all the quarterbacks in the draft. And everything you read about him is just like incredibly smart, great intangibles, leader, all this stuff. Even though they say one of the draft analysis was like backup forever, but a really good one at that. I don't know. You know, someone else said that he'd be my top choice for a flag football team. So I don't know.
I'm still trying to figure out what that means. That was like 3 days ago and I still don't get it yet. But stats from last season after Zappe transferred to Western Kentucky from Houston Baptist, 5,967 passing yards, 69.2% completion rate, 62 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. So just preposterous production from him.
Yeah, those are huge numbers. Yeah. But I don't think it's a coincidence again that they drafted somebody who's smart, because I think, you know, the Patriots, you know, with all respect to Mac Jones and Bill Belichick and everybody there, it's unlikely they're going to replicate the kind of dominance they had with Tom Brady around, meaning that they're not just going to run away with the division or run away with the conference every season. And with all these teams in the AFC loading up and all the increased parity in the conference, you know, it's going to be a little bit tighter, I think, for the Patriots going forward, even if they turn into a champion again. It's, you know, these seasons for them could come down to a game or two. And Matt Groh said that when he was talking about the Bailey Zappe pick, that you just can't afford to be caught short at that position. So I think for them to bring someone in who at least projects as someone who almost right away should be able to grasp the playbook and be able to at least functionally run the offense if called upon, I think, you know, to at least maybe give them a chance to win if Mac Jones has to leave a game early or miss a week. Obviously, if your starting quarterback misses a majority of the season, you're probably not going anywhere. But if you have someone who can adequately, you know, plug the hole for a game or two, could mean the difference between you going to the playoffs or missing the playoffs. So I think there is real value in that, especially if Bailey Zappi is someone who could provide that to them, you know, for a while. And then again, if down the road he turns into someone like Matt Castle, who they took in the seventh round, that, you know, maybe he shows out during one season when Mac Jones goes out or some team wants to trade for him, and you can package him with an aging player like the Patriots did with Mike Vrabel and get a draft pick that turned into someone like Patrick Chung, that's obviously added value. So for a variety of reasons, I can see why the Patriots did it. I do like the pick for a lot of reasons, but at the same time, for all the reasons you mentioned, there are a lot of questions about it, and they probably could have gotten away with just punting this need until next year.
Yep, even Jacoby Brissett back in 2017, the Patriots were able to get a first-round draft pick for him after one or two regular season starts and one really good preseason start. So I think that's the ideal outcome for this pick. You get a good backup. You get a Matt Castle for a couple of years, and then you flip him for some sort of a somewhat early round draft pick. So he will be an interesting player to watch this summer. It'll be interesting to see how this whole quarterback situation shakes out, because it basically seems like this is kind of the death knell for Jarrett Stidham, because Brian Hoyer is getting $3 million guaranteed in his new contract. That means he's probably not getting cut. You're not going to cut Bailey Zappi as a fourth round pick, and you're probably not going to keep four quarterbacks unless Zappi just looks completely lost. So I would imagine the Patriots are hoping Jarrett Stidham has a very productive preseason and they're able to trade him to the Texans or the Raiders or something like that. Or maybe even Josh McDaniels or Nick Caserio wants him before that, and they'll trade him before training camp. But we will see what happens with all that. And for our fifth pick here, fifth takeaway, we're running short on time, so we'll just make this a kind of a grab bag here. What was your, other than the ones we've talked about so far, what's one other thing that stood out to you in this draft from the Patriots?
Yeah, I think the writing is on the wall for at least one of the running backs already on the roster, if not two. I mean, the Patriots got Pierre Strong in the fourth round, who a lot of people think really highly of, that he could develop into a three-down starter in the NFL. Well,
I like that pick a lot. That was a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he looks really, all of his highlights look really great. Kevin Harris is one who some people think he's a dinosaur, but the Patriots, we're talking about a team that loves Brandon Bolden and Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, so it doesn't surprise me that they take someone like that who's more bruising or kind of a throwback. So we'll have to see. The Kevin Harris pick is something that, like, maybe that just doesn't pan out, but I think they definitely drafted Pierre Strong with the mindset that he's going to be able to contribute. And maybe it is just he's a replacement for James White, who's not guaranteed a spot on this team. I mean, he's not going to be ready for the start of training camp, I think he said.
Start of OTAs, at least. We'll see about training camp, yeah.
Start of OTAs. He's 30, coming off a serious hip injury. I don't think you can bank on getting anything from him this season. Some people like myself have thought that J.J. Taylor could be the next James White, but the Patriots just haven't given much playing time the last 2 years, so maybe they're not sold on him either. So maybe it's just nothing more than they want to bring in a good new young passing down back to put behind Damien Harris and Ramondre Stevenson. But Pierre Strong seems to profile somebody who could be much more than that. And we've talked about it a lot, that Damien Harris is a free agent after this season. And, you know, it's kind of considered bad business in the NFL to pay a lot of money to a running back. And I just think you could easily see a scenario now where Damien Harris is gone next season and Ramondre Stevenson is the starter with Pierre Strong. And then maybe J.J. Taylor or Kevin Harris, we'll see, behind him. But either way, I think the writing's on the wall for at least one running back and maybe two, depending on how you think the Damien Harris situation will play out.
Yeah, Kevin Harris was a guy who, after the 2020 season, I think a lot of draft people were reasonably high on. He averaged 113 rushing yards a game, scored something like 15 touchdowns. Then he had back surgery and just really wasn't the same player the following season. So we'll see if he can kind of regain any of that this year with the Patriots. If he can, if he looks like that 2020 player and Pierre Strong looks like the player he did in the FCS this year, then you could see a situation where Damien Harris is traded before the season. I think that's probably unlikely at this point, just because he is a very good player and a very valuable player to this offense. But the Patriots have a lot of talent in that running back room, and that's a position that outside of the third down back spot was one of their deepest on the roster, even coming into this draft. So that's going to be very interesting to see how all that shakes out. One final point here. I do like some of the late round offensive linemen the Patriots got. Chasen Hines from LSU and Andrew Stuber from Michigan. This draft is very heavy on smaller school or non kind of power five guys. But both of them came from big time programs, multi-year starters. They've got a lot of the traits that the Patriots typically look for in their offensive linemen. And the Patriots really don't have a lot of depth anywhere on the offensive line right now. They obviously had the huge hole at left guard that I think a lot of people now expect Cole Strange to fill, but there's really no locked in backup at any offensive line position. You're probably expecting Justin Herron to be on the team because he's been the best of their available backups right now. I know some people like Drew Desjarlais too, who they got from the CFL, but there's a very clear path for both Hines and Stuber to grab roster spots and potentially grab high level backup positions this season, if both of them perform the way they did in college, in training camp. So I think those were two decent value adds. I saw a lot of places projecting both of them as up to fifth round picks. The Patriots were able to get one in the sixth, one in the seventh. So I think obviously a late round guard and a late round tackle aren't going to be really headline news in training camp, but those are both guys that I think could push for some roster spots and may even contribute for the Patriots this year.
Yeah. And I on Hines, I've seen some people compare him to Mike Onwenu. That either not just as a player, but just sort of the similar fit with the Patriots. And the Patriots have had a lot of success developing some of these late round offensive linemen in recent years. And so I think it's interesting how, you know, a lot of people have sort of penciled in Cole Strange into left guard, and that probably makes sense. Again, I mentioned earlier, you never know what will happen with David Andrews at center. Who knows? But I just think at right tackle, I can very easily see a scenario in which Trent Brown is not the answer at right tackle for the next two seasons between his injuries, the weight clauses the Patriots put in there. You know, I'm not locking Trent Brown in as the right tackle of the future for the Patriots. And we all saw how good Mike Onwenu looked at tackle the season that he played over there. So I just think, you know, there's a scenario in which that you could have like Cole Strange at left guard, Mike Onwenu at right tackle eventually, and then who knows at right guard with Shaq Mason gone. Maybe it is someone like Chasen Hines, or maybe it's, how do I pronounce his name, the CFL guard?
Drew Desjarlais.
Desjarlais, yeah. Maybe it's someone like him or someone else that they already have on the roster or something like that. I just think people are sort of locked in right now to this idea of you're going forward with, Isaiah Wynn, we'll have to see, but him, Cole Strange, David Andrews, Mike Onwenu on the right guard, and Trent Brown at right tackle. I just think it's possible that as early as, you know, the 2023 season, looks a lot different there. And so the Chasen Hines pick in particular is interesting to me, but the Subaru one as well.
Yeah, definitely a lot of injury concerns with both Isaiah Wynn and Trent Brown. And one funny note on Chasen Hines, apparently he was explaining to us after the draft, he used to be a big time baseball player and his nickname growing up was Big Papa. Because he was very large, which got him a shout out from David Ortiz on Twitter after the draft, which I'm sure he appreciated. But that will do it for this week's edition of the Nesson Patriots podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Zach Cox Nesson. You can follow Dakota at Dak Randall Nesson. And you can follow along with all of our Patriots coverage as we head toward OTAs. First OTA session that will be open to the media, currently scheduled for May 26th. So we got a couple of weeks before that, but we'll have plenty of Patriots news as we get toward that point. So be sure to follow along.